medical community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the manager of business applications at Brightview Landscapes. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Hout Cooper, Vice President of JD Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, what's new?
What's new? My house. My house is new. That's new, yes. Bought a new house and in the process of moving and, of course, discovering what box I put whatever in. Also, the family that I bought the house from, they had everything wired and connected, Google Home. They've got Nest devices all over the place, Nest devices I've never seen before. I'm not really sure what they're doing. Maybe I'm being monitored. I don't know. But as I go through and try to reconnect these things, each and every device has had to be reset, factory reset. So I'm one by one each day, take a device, spend an hour, reset it, connect it, configure it. And I've had to regiment myself. You know, I spend an hour on one and then I got to go unload a few boxes. I got to take it a piece at a time. I can't because I get so frustrated. I don't know. I know I'm supposed to be a technologist or whatever because I work on computers all darn day or software all darn day, but I hate this stuff. I tell you what, this is frustrating as hell. Oh my gosh.
So have you struggled with anyone in particular, like something you can't turn on or off?
Well, that's funny you should say that. They have this wonderful place all wired and connected. So much so, they have a remote control for the garbage disposal. I don't know if anybody else has their garbage disposal with a remote control, but I do. And that's because the kitchen sink is on an island that is so long and wide, you can't actually reach the switch. So they put it on a remote control.
On the other side?
Yeah, or you have to run around the other side, yep, and switch it on and off. No, it just doesn't make any sense. But so they've got everything connected is kind of the point. But they've got this like dome light at the top of the stove, you know, so you got the oven and you got the fan and everything. And then
top
of the hood. Yeah, they got a light at the top of the hood. It's a nice warm orange glow. I know this because it's on 24/7 and I flipped every damn switch. I've flipped every remote they got. I've gone through the oven, every setting I could find. I honestly think they did this on purpose and they left their phone number for exactly this purpose. So I could just call and be like, all right, I give up. What do you, you know, where is this? I don't know. So now, you know, I close the door when I go to bed at night, because otherwise I've got this nice warm orange glow coming in from the kitchen into my room. So anyway, yeah, my team thinks it's the oven light mysteries or the oven light saga. They look forward to it now. Day by day, whether or not there's any progress in me figuring this darn thing out.
Well, I'm glad that we have plenty of episodes left to record. So I can now, instead of ask what's new, be like, hey, did you figure out that light yet?
Well, and I'm too stubborn. I'm not going to call them. Absolutely not. I'm not going to give in. I'm going to get a ladder. I'm going to climb up there. I'm going to unscrew those damn things before I call them. I mean, come on.
Wow.
So that's what's new. That's what's in my world. How about you? Anything new in your world?
Let's see here. Still working on the marathon training and made a move myself. So moved out west.
West?
Yeah. And I technically north. Otherwise, if I moved west from my former house, I would be in the Gulf. I'd be swimming.
All right. So you're out west now.
I am.
FL made it to the big CO. Is that the news?
That is the news. Yes, I had some job requirements that took me to a different location for the time being. So that's my news. I'm getting acclimated to elevation. When you go from 13 feet to over 5,000, that's a little bit of a change. But my smartwatch is telling me that I'm at least now acclimated to 3,600, I think. And I've only been out here less than a week, so I'm getting there. I'll be curious to see how long it takes to get that last 60%. But now I'm going to lose all my heat acclimatization because I was 100% heat acclimated. But
yeah,
we'll see. It'll be interesting to see how the training goes. Fortunately, this is a down week for me. So I did give myself some time to take a little extra time off this week and pick back up. I had a 16-mile run on Saturday and yeah, that was lovely.
If you say so.
Yes, yeah.
If you say so.
It was good. But yeah, so this week is a down week. Struggling to figure out where the box is that contains, well, I needed to find my microphone earlier. Like, crap, where's my microphone? So
there you go.
There we go.
Yeah. So what was your first priority when you got to your new place as far as what you set up first?
I'll give you one guess since you've made fun of me on this podcast before about it. About my organization.
Oh, I know what it is. Okay. Yeah. So that had to be the spice rack.
That's right.
Yeah.
Pretty much the first thing.
Spice rack in the pantry. El Pepitas. Yep. That would be. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's how I roll. The kitchen is one of the first things I do. If I can find a glass or a plate or, the knives and the spoons so I can at least eat and have one little semblance of normalcy, I'm okay. Like, the kitchen comes above my clothes. I can live out of a bag. That's not a problem, but
sure.
I need a kitchen. So I put together my kitchen.
Nice. That must be why my bar is set up already.
Clearly.
I'm kidding. I kid. There's just boxes down there. Well, welcome to Colorado and welcome to altitude. Good luck getting adjusted. Hopefully it actually helps out your training. So
yeah, we'll see. I'll give you a call. I can drag you on a run or a hike or something.
Yeah, sure. That sounds great.
Wow.
All right.
You all hear that excitement?
Yeah. Enthusiasm. Let me pair that back anyway.
Right.
All right. So what are we doing today? What are we talking about today?
I heard we were going to talk about Learn JDE.
Very cool.
I know. I'm excited about this. We have a special guest with us today to kind of go over Learn JDE with us. This has been something that I know I've used, but I've also gotten lost in, and thought it would be good for us to highlight, and had also heard on some of the special interest groups that there had been a presentation on Learn JDE that was very well received. So I thought it would be great for us to highlight that for our users.
Absolutely. I mean, if we get a topic out there that really resonates, why not help amplify it if we can?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with that, I'm going to introduce our guest, and his name is Nick Velhartiski. Hopefully I got that right.
That's pretty close. Velhartiski, but it totally looks like it's spelled Velhartiski. The C is pronounced as an S. It's Bohemian.
Oh.
For what it's worth, when I was a camp counselor trying to tell campers how to pronounce my name, they started calling me Nick Very Hard to Say, which is actually pretty close.
Well, I mean, you're on a podcast with a couple others who have last names that gets butchered all the time. And
I respond to anything remotely close that starts with a V.
Right? That's the same for my first or last name. I respond to pretty much anything as long as it's close enough. All right, Nick, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, what your interests are, and then let's talk a little bit about Learn JDE.
Sure thing. My name is Nick Velhartiski. I've been a tech support engineer for Oracle for 18 years in E1 tools on the dark side, I understand, as you want to call it.
Well played.
So I support certain areas, UBE, BI Publisher, security, LDAP, printing, scheduler, Vertex, probably some others that I'm forgetting. So principal tech support engineer and recovering philosopher and recovering runner from when I was in school. It's funny that there's a whole story behind that, how I ended up going from that to doing tech support for a software company.
There are so many good stories where people, their backgrounds. I mean, like AJ Schifano always jokes about his background. He was a lit major, I believe, or something along those lines. And he finds his way into tech and now product manager of course, our digital platform. So very curious. So how does a philosophy major end up in this industry doing what you're doing? Like, what led you there?
Well, tech support pays off student loans more quickly than teaching philosophy.
The honesty.
And I got into computers when I was in grad school because I ended up buying and customizing computers for recording audio, because that's what I would do if I had no bills to pay. It's just do music and audio recording. So when I got my first tech job and told him, you know, what I was able to do, I said, well, you know, if I don't know it, I'm sure I'll figure it out. So ended up getting into tech support that way.
Wow. So healthy curiosity seems to just benefit people left and right. I mean, every time I turn around, just the willingness to like just crack it open and figure it out and show that passion, and it just opens doors, I suppose. It leads you down different paths. It's pretty cool. That's awesome.
That is exactly it. And the two superpowers you get, if you're fortunate in the JDE sphere, are humility and curiosity, because you come to learn that an ERP suite like JD Edwards, especially JD Edwards, is just so massive. There's no way for one person to know everything. You can't. And the only way that you're going to make it is by networking with other people who know things that you don't, and helping them out in the areas that you're competent in, and then hoping that they will help you similarly, and expanding that network that you have with people and working collaboratively with them. And I think that's integrated into the JDE culture. I think that's why it's so long lived. I've never been in any other IT organization where the people have been there as long as the people I know in JDE. I've been here for 18 years and I'm a newbie compared to some of the people who are celebrating 25 years in JDE. And I'm amazed. That doesn't happen in other IT fields or industry. And I think it's because of the JDE culture, and that because JDE is so massive in Enterprise One or world even, but especially Enterprise One, it's supported on so many different platforms, and one person can know everything. JD Edwards people tend to go above and beyond to try to figure things out that are even slightly outside the scope we support, just because there's so many different things that we have to know. And I think our customers respond positively to that willingness to go above and beyond to try to figure things out, and not just say, well, this is my little compartment and I don't know what that is, so I'm just going to light it on fire and throw it over the wall and somebody else can talk to you.
Along those lines, do you think that the way in which JD Edwards got built and the consistency maybe in some of the design and the design constructs between World and E1 and whatnot, that if you do show that curiosity, and you do kind of look under the hood and you're able to figure a few things out, you're rewarded because you get to apply that to other areas as you try to pick up and learn other areas, which is, you're just constantly getting rewarded for showing that curiosity. And it just encourages you to dig more. It gives you confidence to be able to say, look, the reason I like this system is I can actually figure it out. I'm confident that even if I don't know manufacturing, but I know sales or procurement, I'm confident I'll be able to figure it out. Or I'll find somebody that will help me figure it out. Like, I know I'm not in this alone. So you get kind of both sides. Does that make sense?
Totally. Yeah. And it is nice that you can expand your knowledge in that way incrementally, since there is that consistency across modules, even on new things that you haven't encountered before, but you can apply things that you know in another area. And it scales to some degree, like troubleshooting, gathering logs, and you end up asking the same kinds of questions frequently, like, okay, is this an issue that you have? When did it start? What changed right before that? Did it ever work? If so, when's the last time it worked? Is it reproducible on demand? Let's capture it with debug logging. If it's not reproducible on demand, what are the last 3 times that it happened? And give me the common denominators. What time of day? How many users? Where does it work? Where does it not work? So that we can cross-reference. So, but the community really is the biggest asset, that you can just talk to others and get help so readily from others that they're willing to help. And I think the connection between support and development for JDE is very strong and powerful. I think that's one of its greatest assets. Like, I remember listening the other day. I have only recently become familiar with your podcast, and you guys are great. I highly recommend everybody go check out other podcasts. I was listening to episodes 51 and 52. You were interviewing John Holder, superhero of Enterprise One architecture, on discussing virtual batch queues. And what a brilliant piece of architecture that was added to E1. It's great that even a legacy product like JD Edwards that could have a developer decide, you know what, we need to have batch server clustering built into software. That we could just add batch servers. We don't need to reconfigure reports to run on this new server. We just add them in the background, and you're scaling up your ability to process heavier batch volumes without needing to reroute anything. That's brilliant. I mean,
yeah,
great podcast. Episode 51 and 52.
Well, his idea, like you said, to just build in elasticity before elasticity was necessarily
software.
A thing.
Software.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, it's just brilliant. You're right. He's sorry to interrupt you there.
No, he's brilliant. And whenever I talk to him, I feel like I wish I could turn on record on my brain and then play it back later at like half speed so that I can get all of the detail. There's so much information packed in everything he says that my brain isn't fast enough to get all of the details. And so anytime I get to talk to him about anything tech, it's great.
Oh, and he speaks at that pace that I'm sure he even thinks faster than he speaks, but he still speaks so fast that you know that he's thinking at such a lightning speed. And it's very, very hard to actually keep up. He does a very good job articulating, but conversations with John are so dense and packed with information that you have to stay on his every word, but you really can't because he's going so fast. So if you ever get an opportunity, just kind of riff on like, whether it be music or physics or anything like that, and just get him going. Oh my gosh, so much fun. Just sit back and learn and just take it all in. It's pretty cool.
We've had a lot of good conversations about both JD Edwards and about music. My Clark Kent job is at Oracle, but I also am a musician in my off hours, and so is John, and he's got stuff on Spotify as well. So he shows me the latest things that he's mixed and mastered for his band, Society Burning, I believe. Yep. I don't think he would mind if I plug him.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
We did.
He plugged it. So you're going to come up on a couple episodes when they came out with their latest release on Spotify. We absolutely plugged it. It was, you know, we downloaded it and checked it out, and it's very cool. So from a musician standpoint, I mean, what's your specialty?
I'm a keyboardist.
Oh, keyboardist. Okay.
Ah.
Nice.
Recording musician.
Have you played most of your life then? Keyboard or piano? Starting?
I suppose now I would say I've played most of my life. A lot of it by ear. I started probably sixth, seventh grade, mostly just by ear. And then took lessons in 10th grade for like 6 weeks or something. But I kept playing on my own after that. And then when I got to college, I took music theory 1 and 2 and then jazz improvisation. So then I had names for all the things that I'd been doing. The music theory was huge then.
That. Yeah.
So then I got into recording. Mostly to record my own stuff originally, but then once your friends discover that you can record music, like, hey, can you record a band? So in grad school, when I was customizing computers to record music, it was for that purpose.
Wow.
That's what got me into computers, and that's what got me into Oracle. So, wow.
Oh, my gosh. Torture. That's so cool.
That's awesome.
I'm always amazed by our community as a whole, both in terms of what's brought them to where they are, but also what they do outside of their Clark Kent jobs or their day jobs, right? It's always fascinating to me. I love that. And I love that we get to also share that with others in the community. It's amazing how you even find more to connect on than just JD Edwards within the community. So thank you for sharing with us, Nick. I really appreciate it.
I don't know who came up with the name JD Connection, but they were pretty smart.
Right?
And I enjoy both of your autobiographical asides in the podcast. It's great. Well-rounded picture of the people and what interests them out in the world as well as with JDE.
Yeah, I mean, we all have a connection through, obviously, the product, which is great. But to be able to share in what we know about the product, but share a little bit about ourselves and connect on different levels. I really enjoy it.
So, I do too. Yep.
And getting to know everybody and their background, and it's very rewarding. I wish we would have started the podcast earlier, to be fair. I mean, you know, podcasts have been out now for a long time, but they got really popular during COVID, right? And it took us a while to tap into this medium, but I'm really glad that Chandra asked me to do it, because this has been no shortage of fun and educational along the way. I mean, I think that's the other thing that we were talking to I think it was John Vaughn the other day, actually, about the podcast. And it was like, we're learning as well as we go through and we talk to our guests. And sure, did I know what BBQ was? Yeah. Did I have a high level understanding of it? Yes. Did I help Greenlight the project? Sure. But did I have the depth that John gave us that episode? No, absolutely not. And I'm trying to gobble up as much as I can too, because that stuff really interests me. So there's always an opportunity to learn. I'm a little selfish in that way too. You know.
That's an okay kind of selfish.
Did you know staying in the JDE loop is easy with Quest? Sign up for the free JD Edwards newsletter or follow Quest JDE on LinkedIn or Facebook for the latest Oracle updates, new content, publications, and news on upcoming webinars and events. For more info, visit questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.
All right. Well, why don't we dig into Learn JDE and what you have to show us today?
Sure. Well, let me start by saying, when I heard that I was going to be on your podcast, and I hadn't seen the podcast before, but I was told, like, I'd done the presentation of Learn JDE for the SIG groups the last three times that it's been presented with my great coworker, Kathy Simpson. And normally she would do the slide deck presentation. And then at the end, I would do an interactive demo of, hey, let me show you some cool things that I found on Learn JDE that you can do. So I thought, oh, great, I'll just do a demo of that kind of stuff. And then when I heard, it's an audio-only podcast. You're not going to see anything. There's no screen sharing. It's nothing. I thought, that's kind of like the difference between performing a magic trick and describing a magic trick to people. It kind of loses something without the visual presentation. So I thought, well, I'll make it work. So I figured we'll do something. I wanted to share a story from my Clark Kent days before I did JDE anything. When I was a grad student at the University of Toronto, I was out walking one day out downtown, and they have this extensive underground pedestrian walkway system called PATH. It's the largest in the world, I think. It's 30 kilometers, like 18 miles of shops, restaurants, food courts, and other services, pharmacies, banks, and it's all underground. It connects multiple things. Like, you could go forever without coming up for air, all the way from like around where the campus is all the way down to the harbor front without coming up for air. I didn't realize this at the time. I went downstairs and I'm from a hotel or something. And like, oh, there are shops here. And I went looking and, oh, these are cool. And then I kept going and walking and it just kept going. And I thought after a while, wow, how do I get back to any of these stores? If I find something that I like, I'll never know how to find my way back to this place. So I better just buy whatever I find that I like. But I was just kind of blown away that it just kept going and kept going. So that kind of blew me away. And J.D. Edwards rewards people who have this kind of sense of curiosity and openness to just keeping continuing discovering. So I wanted to mention that PATH, because that reminds me a lot of Learn JDE and okay, what you can learn on this site. And so here's the TLDR, the too long didn't read, for anybody who starts listening to my voice and then after 2 minutes shuts out. Here's the comparison. When we did the Learn JDE presentation to the SIG group, our main focus was, what's the difference between our knowledge garden, like KM, knowledge management system on the My Oracle support site, and Learn JDE. What's the difference between those two? And I likened it to the difference between going to the doctor's office and going to the mall. The knowledge management site is where you go when you've got a problem or an error or a specific thing that you're working on that you need. I need a prescription. I need to figure out how to fix this. You go to the knowledge garden, you search on the error message you're getting or the symptoms that you have, and then figure out what the solution for that is. You might find it in communities, you might find it in KM knowledge, you might find it in a bug, but it's for specific troubleshooting sort of advice. Whereas Learn JDE is where you go when you don't necessarily have some problem or a thing that you're troubleshooting or trying to fix, but you're just kind of wanting to browse and see what's out there. Like, what about JDE's new? Or what features are in the latest release? Or what is this whole thing about Orchestrator anyway? What is it? What does it do? How do I make one? How do I find one? I was listening to your podcast, Chandra, about working on your first orchestration. And really getting deep into it. So, and I can talk about that a little bit. So that's kind of what Learn JDE is. It's like going to the mall, you know, window shopping, and you know, maybe you go into a store and check things out, or maybe just, you know, browse to the next thing and see what else is there. I'd mentioned before we started recording that being on Learn JDE is like going into IKEA. Because you walk into IKEA and it's amazing little twists and turns and things that keep going. And then there are little doors, you know, or little secret passages like you just go through and you end up in some completely different part of the store and wonder how you got there and how you could get out. And yeah, that's what Learn JDE is. And it is amazing to me how deep you can go at learnjde.com. Like the high level view is there are multiple different kinds of knowledge or content that we have on the site. There's documentation, which is like links to supporting guides, all of our installation guides and configuration guides. There are learning paths, which are like sequential steps for end-to-end processes. There are quick tours and tutorials, like recordings that describe the functionality of things and how-to demos. We have something called OBE, Oracle by Example, which are step-by-step activities that you can complete in your own environment. And then they've got other content, links to technical papers, frequently asked questions, CAM documents, information centers. There's a lot when you get to Learn JDE. So I wanted to maybe start with, if we go to the main site, and just kind of,
would it be helpful if I shared my screen? Sure. Kind of walk through it? Okay, let me do that. Even though people can't necessarily see it, we're going to go there.
Or you could say, hey, everybody, if you have a separate browser and say you're listening on your phone or something, why don't you go to learnjde.com?
Exactly.
And you'll notice from the learnjde.com, we have a top menu bar with menu navigation to topics and resources. There's the applications, tools and technology, and resources. You have these carousel panes in the middle that highlight topics and events. There's the release 25 on the left that came out in June this year, 2025. Register for InFocus, big expo. It's coming up, I think, September 9th through 11th this year at the Sheraton in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And then the third pane over on the right is a carousel pane that has, you may notice, little dashes down there. So you can actually scroll through different sub panes, you know, like for upgrades or implementations, or there's the Learn JDE what's new, and then the product catalog. So there are all those links. And then you see in the yellow bar below, they've got yet more things. There's roadmap if you want to know what's the direction that JDE is going in, any announcements, JDE and SaaS, JDE documentation. And it just keeps going. If you keep scrolling down, there's the new in JDE, user experience, digital transformation, and simplify and automate. And then if you keep scrolling down, there's more about JD Edwards and Oracle Cloud. And then, of course, at the very bottom, then are a bunch of smaller, tiny links with company information about the Quest Oracle community, contact info, licensing and sales. So smaller stuff. There's a lot on this just single one page. So let's scroll back up to the top menu bar. There's also the little magnifying glass in the upper right. If you just want to search on something like Orchestrator or something, you could just type in the top search there and pull up, you know, search results for everything. And then the last thing on this main page I wanted to point out was the little profile icon in the upper right. If you click on that, that will show you, you know, you can find us on X, formerly known as Twitter, the LinkedIn JD Edwards group, this great podcast, the JDE Connection. This is awesome. That's where I discovered you guys. Our YouTube channel, Attitude at Altitude, blogs that Ward Quarles does, and that are also subscribable through email and RSS feeds, and then a contact us email link as well. Anyway, I know that that's a whole ton of different ways to find stuff. But that's why it totally reminded me of IKEA or the path walkways in Toronto. It was just, there are multiple rabbit holes in rabbit holes from anywhere that you start browsing and window shopping from here. I didn't want to bury the lead. I wanted to show you guys one of the coolest things that I discovered about Learn JDE. If we could do a demo, if I could walk you through it. Let's say that you wanted to know, like, what's the difference between JDE Enterprise One release 24 and 25? Like, I want to know what's the difference. I want to be able to compare them so that I could go to my management and they could evaluate at a high level. Should we upgrade? And what's the benefit? What are the new things that are out in the new release? So let's say go to the resources link at the top menu and click on that. And then under resources, there's product catalog on the left. And then when that opens, oh, we might need to sign in. All right. Now from here, there's a compare link in the upper right corner.
Right here.
Let's click on the compare. And now this screen, this is the coolest thing that I've found so far on LearnJDE. So this screen will allow you to compare E1 releases. You could do it by date or release. So let's click on compare by release. And then in the next blank, the architectural layer, I'm going to say tools just because that's my jam. I'm from the tech side. And the dark side, I know. And let's do from release 24 to release 25, let's say. Okay. And then you can do control click on any of the topics below. Let's select all of them to select all the different areas: introduction, system foundation, one view reporting, mobile enterprise applications, technology tools, integrations, user experience, and cloud. And so we're going to select all of them and then click compare. The next page will show you each the feature that you selected and the release that it was added in. And you can see down in the lower right corner that there are multiple pages of search results. So you can click on each of those to browse all the different results.
There are 45 of them. We will be here a while.
There are many. So let's just go back and take a look at a few of them. Each feature should be a clickable hyperlink, which you can click on for more info. So on the first page of results, like there should be one for Server Manager Performance Workbench. Okay. Click on Server Manager Performance Workbench. And the pop-up window that we get will have a brief description of the feature, the release that it was included in, the benefits. And if you scroll down, you'll see other useful links about the feature. Like there's a link to a tutorial. There's a link to an OBE, an Oracle by example, step-by-step screenshots from the Oracle Help Center. It's a link to the Server Manager Guide, Chapter 38, which talks about integration of Performance Workbench into Enterprise One Tools 9.2.9 release. And then link to the Update Center if this feature is included in an update. And then there's a copy link button. So if you find something cool that you're like, I want to know how to get back to this, like the thing that I didn't have when I was in Toronto on the path, I'm like, I'm never going to find this store again. You can click on copy link here and paste it into your note or something if you want to be able to get back to this cool thing that you found. So that's another cool feature of this.
That's so, really cool. I like that. Link now, copy. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Performance Workbench, formerly it was a separately downloadable tool that E1 administrators would use to analyze logs. Like if you have a report that's running and it's taking way too long and you want to know, why is this taking so long? You used to be able to run the report with debug mode enabled and get the debug logs and then plug it into Performance Workbench, and it would analyze and parse the logs and show you where the report was spending all of its time. Like how many times did it run this business function and how many seconds did it take for each time and for the total amount of time, so that you could analyze where the report was spending all of its time. Well, now they've taken that tool and integrated it into Server Manager, starting with Tools 9.2.9, which is great. I mean, I didn't know this until I just saw it on LearnJDE. I was like, oh, that's totally awesome. So yeah, I used that tool all the time to find out why slow running reports were taking so long. See, like, which business functions is this running most frequently and against which tables? Any like massive tables that may need to be cleaned up and maybe re-indexed, or maybe the SQL is not really optimized, you know, but you could kind of see where the smoking guns might be. Like, where is this report spending all of its time? Anyway, we can click out of here and let me show you another example from the search results. Like for another example, there's a feature named Improved Performance with TCP Fast Open on Oracle Autonomous Database. And there we go. So maybe you're an E1 customer on release 24 from a year ago, like on Tools 9.2.8.2, and you have Oracle Autonomous Database serverless. And you're wondering, like, what improvements have been made in the latest release? And you see in release 25, oh, that might speed up your system. Here, this new feature, this improved performance with TCP Fast Open, you can see that starting with tools 9293, this feature, TCP Fast Open, can decrease network latency and improve application performance for your client connections. So you can like click on the technical brief, for example, down below, and then there's a hyperlinked doc at the top, near the top, improved performance with TCP Fast Open. Click on that link there. And then it'll open, like scroll down at like page 4, and you should be able to see an executive summary of the feature and see, you know, there's also a table at the bottom. In the table at the bottom, like enabling this Fast Open feature, if you use Oracle Autonomous Database serverless, improves the speed of interactive applications by 22% and improves the speed of batch processes by 14%. So these are the rabbit holes that I go down when I go and learn JDE, like, oh, this is awesome. Anyway, this, just for example, is a what you end up spending hours and hours on if you start going down these rabbit holes. So close out of this. And as our last example, I wanted to bring up from the compare releases report. Let's go back to the browser tab with the report results and there, click on platform certifications. And platform certifications, the pop-up window shows you like all of the new certified platforms for release 25. Enterprise One Tools release 9.29x. So it's like, oh, it's on Oracle Database 23 AI, on Oracle Database Service. It's on Microsoft Edge, Chromium 134. It's on IBM WebSphere Application Server 90522 and a bunch of other different browsers. And it also shows you like platforms that are being withdrawn, like Microsoft Edge, Chromium 123 being withdrawn, WebSphere Application Server 90514, Apple iOS 16 if you're using iPads, Safari on iPad, iOS 16. So it shows you, if you're trying to stay current in your certifications, what new platforms are certified and which ones are being withdrawn. So
it also gives you that link to the statement of direct and Oracle support. So it's kind of a quick update on what this release gave you and then, of course, took away. But also, if you're concerned about the future and what our plans are to the future, now you've got a link to that as well. So you can go check out what are we doing with Java? What are we doing with WLS or whatnot? So very cool.
Yes, very good. That statement of direction, by the way, for anyone listening, that document ID 749393.1, bookmark that and favorite it because the development updates that probably quarterly. If you want to know like what direction are we going in or what are they looking at certifying in the future, that's the document that if it's to be publicly known, that's where it will be. And then when you're finished browsing through these interesting features and looking at the link tutorial videos or whatever, the OBE step-by-step screenshots and Oracle guides, then so when you've been done browsing through all of these little links, you can click on the download detailed report and that will save this report as a PDF for presenting to management, to a high-level summary of the feature changes between the two releases that you're comparing so that they can evaluate what features might be valuable to the business and whether or not they want to upgrade to a newer release. So this is my cool thing.
Yeah, great.
I mean, right now you're comparing obviously 24 to 25 and it's nice and digestible and helps you try to build that business case, right? This comes up with what, 18 pages of content for you to go through. This goes back a ways, I believe. So you can go to further releases way back. And of course, the further back you go, the more content you have to sort through, you know? So that becomes the challenge when trying to build that business case is, how do you filter it to like the top 3 to 5 things that we're going to be able to take advantage of that are going to put that ROI over the top and really make the sale of this update or this upgrade? But it's also a reason to try not to get too far behind because.
Well, that is the thing.
I was going to say, like for us, it's been 4 years since we've upgraded. So for us, this report is going to be lengthy when I run it. And, you know, obviously I need to submit that to management in a form that's a little bit even more digestible than probably the 50 pages that it will generate.
And you can pare down the particular items that you want to run this report over to narrow down the things that management might be interested in most. You can rerun this report with different data selection to kind of narrow it down. So this is the coolest feature that I've found.
In today's day and age too, you take that PDF. So Chandra, in your case, you're going to have 100 page plus PDF of all these features. And you feed that to your large language model and say, here are the top three hot buttons, right, for my management that are going to be, you know, most compelling to my management. What has been released in the last X number of years that align with that, you know, help me build that business case. And I bet you it could help you dissect that and help to build that and pull it out so you don't have to read each and every feature that we've implemented in that time period.
Well, I love that it's got so many different related links. You could look at OBE if you wanted to walk through a step-by-step example, or you can click on tutorial videos and get high-level summaries of things that are like new and catchy. For example, if say we want to close out here and just go back to the main Learn JDE page, another thing that I wanted to bring up just from the main magnifying glass at the top and just look for orchestrator. If we were just going to search on orchestrator, like, oh, I heard that orchestrator is a cool thing about JDE, but I don't know anything. What is an orchestrator? I don't even know. Or maybe let's narrow it down. I'll send you to a video that I found really helpful. Type in the search blank at the top, orchestrate your way to digital business. This was a great presentation video by AJ Schifano, our senior principal product manager for orchestrator for Oracle Tech Foundation. Click on that, orchestrate your way to digital business. The video there is just 11 minutes long. I highly recommend it. For anybody who's interested in orchestrator, you can go deep. There are tons of links and rabbit holes to go down. But I loved watching this video, and my very crude summary of what he was discussing was that business models that were founded on or transformed by digital platforms, like ride sharing, online payments, entertainment, lodging, groceries, restaurant reservations, these have all reset our expectations for what applications should be able to deliver. So like any of us who remember what it was like before 2007, we had all these different kinds of phones. We had RIM BlackBerry devices if you were a hot business executive, you know, or flip phones, brick phones, weird shape phones, slidey phones, whatever. And then after 2007, everything looks like an iPhone. Everything. And not just in form factor, but it's the haptic interface. Everything is touchscreen. Mm-hmm. It looks like an iPhone. And more importantly, it set a paradigm for things. Like computers got to the point where you had very powerful programs and, you know, you could set up ERP suites of software on multiple servers and whatever. But they were complex. They were lengthy in setting up and they weren't agile to change or to adapt to things. Whereas with a phone, the paradigm became you have to be able to download an app and be able to kind of figure it out without needing a 400-page manual to use it. And we just became very accustomed to that new model. So all of these new business models, especially the ones that were built on digital platforms or that have been transformed by them, have these three things in common, AJ says. They're easy, they're accurate, and they're timely. Mm-hmm. And we've grown accustomed to those features and expect them. So our ERP systems should have those same characteristics, like whether it's accounting or manufacturing, inventory, capital asset management, third-party integrations. But ERP is this gigantic ship that doesn't move on a dime, you know. And new product features like Orchestrator allow for that kind of agility. Even though you've got this gigantic ERP system that isn't so super quick to be able to modify it or to completely change it, Orchestrator gives you some amazing capabilities that you didn't previously have. And I think the example that he goes over is, I think, with Internet of Things sensors and forklifts. Mm-hmm. And it's a great example that I'm sure I wouldn't do justice to. But the example that I wanted to bring up, you could use Orchestrator for, that allows this kind of agility with a big ERP suite like JDE, is one that I'm sure other people who've studied Orchestrator have heard about. Like, say, for example, you have a refrigerated truck that needs to maintain a certain temperature and it has Internet of Things configured with sensors in the refrigerated truck and an orchestration that's continuously monitoring when these refrigeration levels fall outside of certain parameters, and they can automatically kick off automated notifications or other automated processes to remediate problem if situation occurs. So that's an excellent use case. So say that you've got a refrigerated truck that needs to keep dairy products at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below to prevent spoilage and maintain food safety. So with these little Internet of Things sensors in the trucks configured to the orchestrator to continuously monitor temperature. If the refrigeration unit malfunctions and the temperature goes over 40 degrees, orchestrator could automatically trigger a chain of events. It could send an alert to the driver, notify the dispatch team, or create a service work order to get the truck to a maintenance depot, all without having a person manually checking to see whether there's a problem. So it allows automation to do the things that it does well and allow humans to spend their time doing the higher level strategic planning and decision making that they do well. For example, these are some of the things that Orchestrator can monitor and do with a refrigerated truck with IoT sensors. It could check temperature threshold alerts if the internal temperature rises above a safe threshold, like 4.4 degrees Celsius for dairy. They could trigger an alert to a logistics team and create a service work order in JD Edwards. Or it could do geofencing and route compliance, monitor truck location by GPS and compare against planned routes. And if the truck deviates, Orchestrator can notify dispatch or log the event for an audit. It can monitor door open events if the truck door opens outside of authorized zones or timeframes, can flag potential security breaches and initiate incident reporting. It could do automated compliance logging and just periodically log the temperature and humidity readings in the truck. It could do dynamic ETA adjustments combined with GPS readings, with traffic APIs, update estimated delivery times in JD Edwards, sales orders or customer portals. It could do predictive maintenance triggers, like if vibration or engine data from the Internet of Things sensors indicates wear, Orchestrator could schedule preventive maintenance before breakdowns occur with the truck. Inventory condition validation link temperature data to specific shipments. So if conditions breach thresholds, that it could flag affected inventory for inspection or quarantine upon arrival. Customer notifications automatically send proactive alerts to customers if delivery is delayed or if the product integrity might be compromised. It could do analytics feedback loop. It could feed sensor data into analytics models and use Orchestrator to adjust future delivery planning or truck assignments. And lastly, data cleanup and archiving. Archive sensor logs after delivery completion, flag anomalies for review, and keep the system lean and audit friendly. So those are like 10 examples, I think, of the things it can monitor. But the orchestration setup, it transforms raw sensor data into actionable business processes to improve safety and compliance and customer satisfaction. So that's the kind of leverage that innovations like Orchestrator bring to JD Edwards. And JD Edwards has always been a very agile software product. It's very configurable. And the fact that we keep coming up with new innovations like Orchestrator, like virtual batch queues, for example, I think speaks to the commitment that this part of the Oracle organization with JDE has toward building new and scalable improvements to customer businesses.
Well, I appreciate that. I completely agree. I mean, as you were describing what Orchestrator can do, I couldn't help but chuckle a little bit, because these days everybody would think it requires AI to do all that, right? That sounded very AI before AI was so prevalent these days, which is why I find it, I understand there's a difference. There is a massive difference between artificial intelligence and our LLMs and, let's say, Orchestrator. However, the automation capabilities that Orchestrator gave to JD Edwards and its customers now are finally being recognized when AI has come about, because people look at AI and go, oh, you can automate this? Here's another use case that I want to automate. And it's like, well, you could have automated that 5 years ago. You didn't need AI for that. You've got Orchestrator for that. You can build this intelligence into your JD Edwards system that monitors for these business conditions and launches, you know, takes action on your behalf. You can already do much of this, but now with AI, it's just going to accelerate what you're able to do with Orchestrator and whatnot. So the combination now of the AI capabilities and Orchestrator capabilities is really very, very, very powerful for our JD Edwards customers. I'm excited to see over the next 1 to 3 years what people come up with and how things evolve and change. So that's awesome.
I totally agree. Between that and the Internet of Things capabilities, what it could offer to the growers module, you know, to check temperature and humidity and rainfall conditions in the field to find out when to water things, or I think that kind of an advantage in real time monitoring.
Without the need to customize. I mean, that's the other thing that people forget is you're not customizing the system. You're just tailoring it to your needs. It doesn't create overhead for you going forward because it effectively inherits whatever changes we make to the system. Orchestrator effectively picks up. So it's not like you have to port those, retrofit those. Sure, you should test them, of course, but at the end of the day, it's a very lightweight way of automating and augmenting your system to meet your needs. So very cool.
So anyway, those are just some of the use cases of fun things to do on LearnJDE that I found.
I love it.
It's kind of like describing, I don't know, the ocean. It's vast, and I don't do it justice, but I hope that bringing up a couple of specific examples will give people an idea of the kinds of rabbit holes that are out there to be gone down and the kinds of things that you can get out of using this site that would help either making a business use case for new features or just doing intelligent comparisons or just learning more about features without being in a troubleshooting scenario where you
right.
just want to yeah. have some general information about what is this feature and what does it do and why would I want it?
Yeah, you attend a conference and you hear something about, you know, logic extensions. You can come back after and really dive in a little bit more than maybe what you got to hear about at a conference or on a SIG call.
I mean, this is a great way. We kind of started off talking about curiosity and the benefits of curiosity. And LearnJDE is a way of satisfying your curiosity. You know what I mean? If you're curious about logic extensions or personalizations or other types of UDOs out there, you know, enterprise process modeler, this is a very good tool for you to be able to dig in and go down your rabbit holes and satisfy that, you know, that Friday afternoon when you've booked a couple hours of learning and you just want to go discover, you know, I keep on hearing about enterprise automation. What is it all about? Let me go look at this. And you can go, you know, dig your way through it. But to your point, it can be used for so many different things.
Yes. There's a lot of information on here. And hopefully just scratching the surface here helps people go out and give them some additional ideas on what to look for and where to look for it.
I appreciate the opportunity to come on your podcast to talk about some of it. I hope that provides some value to some of your listeners out there.
I'm sure it will. I have no doubt I learned some things. So I'm excited to go play with the comparison.
Absolutely. And I love that on the main page when it talks about Premier support extended out to 2036. That is this kind of rolling 10-year window that, you know, for Premier support. And that means not just bug fixes, but new features. Like they are committed to so far like 10-year rolling window. It's great to see these new features coming out and that this is such a wealth of information or a kind of a garden of information where you can go as deep as you want in learning about all of these. So I appreciate the opportunity to come on your podcast to talk about all this. And I need to plug you guys' podcast. Everybody should go listen to these. Seriously, like if you went to InFocus or you went to, you know, Blueprint 4D, but, you know, there's stuff that, oh, I wish I'd have gotten more information on it. It might be in one of your podcasts. I mean, it gets kind of recycled by people that you interview. So I have personally enjoyed a lot of your podcasts and gotten information that I highly recommend, especially the two interviews with John Holder, if you're into that kind of geeky thing.
Yep. Totally appreciate that. And thanks for the props. We're going to keep doing what we've been doing and trying to get connected with as many people as we can within the community to share as much knowledge as we can. You know, and you just scratched the surface today of LearnJDE with a few point examples of how you can leverage it. I know you've got more, so maybe we'll have to have you back on in the future to dig into a few more examples. You go out there and you discover new rabbit holes. You're like, hey, I think people would be interested in this. You get the next two or three, you know, ping us and we'll bring you on and we'll go down those rabbit holes with you. And I'm sure our audience will appreciate it.
Absolutely. I'm sure they would.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Yep. No problem. Well, thanks for being with us today, Nick. All right.
Well, but and first.
Oh,
you
I almost forgot.
A podcast without a Midwesternism, unless I tell you not to. How does this work?
Oh, geez. The law has been, there's, okay. We have rules.
So this Midwesternism actually is not only fitting for you as you've been going through a move and trying to unpack and remember what was in what box, but you know what? It kind of actually goes well a little bit with the Learn JDE site. Sometimes it's like you're trying to find a needle in a haystack. Like you said, you know, if we stick with our Midwestern colloquialisms, this is one that I definitely have heard a lot. It's like trying to find a needle in a haystack, absolutely. Which if you've ever looked through a haystack or ever had to bale hay in your life, you would know it's not easy to find anything in a haystack. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, it's also not easy to find anything in a bunch of boxes if you don't label them or you use the same containers, like the same black totes with the yellow lids that you can't see inside. The only way to actually tell what's inside is to actually crack them open. So, okay. So I'm not a professional mover. What can I say?
So maybe next time I should gift you a label maker so that you can label your boxes.
Sure. Like you label your pantry. Yes, absolutely.
I'd even take a picture with my phone and then number the boxes so that you have an index on your phone. Oh, see, that's spam.
Jeez, that would have been level organized.
Yeah.
Love it.
It's level.
Oh.
For sure. Wow.
Yes, I love it.
Jeez.
And Paul, the needle in your haystack that you're trying to find, I'm sure, is the light switch that will shut off that light in the open hood that's continually on at your place.
This is true.
And I don't know, other than unscrewing the light bulb, how you're going to manage that.
Exactly.
I guess I just keep thinking that in everybody's house, there's always like one or two switches that you're like, what exactly does this do? And it doesn't seem to do anything. And you're just waiting for somebody from Germany to call and say, hey, put that out. Stop doing that. And maybe somebody else has that switch for your light.
That's right. That's right. I just need somebody to trip over it somewhere.
Or it's in some inobvious place, like inside the oven or some weird place that nobody would look to find.
I've checked under filters. I've checked inside cabinets, under drawer. I'm like, oh my gosh. It's going to be like one of the books in the bookcase. You got a dink, dink, and a geek.
Oh, and then the pull down to the bat cave is going to show up. Yeah,
that's right.
Right?
That's right.
Or maybe it'll just, you have to unscrew the light bulb. My former roommate had a car. It was like a base model of a, I think it was a Subaru. Anyway, he couldn't figure out how to shut off the stereo. He turned on the car, the stereo comes on, and we were both former IT when we were like in and trying to figure out for 45 minutes how to shut off a stereo. He could mute it. He could change it to like CD player if, you know, but like surely there's an off button somewhere. And we found out online they didn't make that. They just assumed it connected to the GPS part of the car. And so it's just on. And I'm like, that has to be a bug. Somebody did not get employee of the month that month. You make a stereo that you can't shut off. You just have to mute it when you turn it on. Like,
wow.
So,
oh my gosh.
We felt like idiots after 45 minutes. Like, surely there's got to be a way to shut this off. Nope, there isn't. And so maybe that's the light over your range. It's like, there's no way to shut it off. It's just
no
on.
Way. It's just
so you need to replace the light bulb.
And they must have liked it. I'm actually guessing that I'll get the ladder out. I'll get up there. I'm guessing that they put like LED pucks up there and those LEDs have a remote. And
that could be.
And they didn't share the remote.
That hid the remote. Yep. This will be funny.
Yeah.
Well, then black electrical tape to the rescue.
Exactly. We'll figure
That's
it out.
Awesome.
Cool.
Well, thank you again, Nick. We really appreciate you taking time to come on today and talk to us about Learn JDE. For questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at thejdeconnection@questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles!
See ya! Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.